Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to a Banking Reinvented episode. And today I'm going to be sitting down with Robert Soutens, our VP Product of Digital Sales and Process Orchestration. Robert, it's very good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Finally, we tried scheduling this one already for a few times.
Many times.
And now we're finally here. And that's actually a good thing because the industry has moved on quite a bit, which we're going to dive into today.
Fast.
It is. And maybe for starters, looking at the past few weeks, looking at the changes in the industry, everything that's out there, specifically in the domain of digital sales, process orchestration, automation, agentic AI, topics we're all going to cover today. What have you seen in the past few weeks that really woke you up thinking, oh, wow, I need to pay attention here or double click?
Yeah, good question. So we have been looking a lot into agents and agents to do the jobs that we want to orchestrate in our processes, especially in digital sales. One of the big things that was always on our minds was, all right, scalability, orchestratability. And what I got really interested about and excited about really is, for example, the MCP that was now, it's been announced for several months, to your point, how quickly it's moving, but it's being embraced right now. And for me, it's super interesting to see that, okay, we have these models, we have these smart agents, we have the training that we can have them do. One of the bigger problems has always been, how do I connect them to my data? Because I want to make the agents work in my context as a bank, but even as an organization like ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that we are now embracing some of these protocols and that you see the speed of which is getting adopted and the speed of innovation is really starting to kind of jump the next hurdle of what we had maybe a couple of months ago. Yeah. So that's what's really caught my attention, and I'm trying to read up as a product guy, because I'm not a technologist. For me, this is sometimes a bit of an adaptation, but it's definitely something that is truly covering one of the business gaps that the technology still had.
Yeah. So to your point, the speed of change is exponential, right? Yeah. And keeping up with all of that change, it demands quite a bit, I guess, from the product organization as well, or a product leader, whether in Backbase or in a bank.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that the reality is always that you're running an organization, you're running your team, you're running your backlog. And although we are all agile and the product development world is the one that is supposed to be super agile, once you're in that tunnel of, you know, supporting your customers, keeping software alive, innovating on the old ways, starting to change your thinking, specifically the thinking about how you tackle a problem. The problems are the same. The solutions, however, now have different options. Yeah. So how do you get the product organization, your product managers, and in combination with your technologists to think about a different way to solving the same problems? One of the examples that I love is we have historically always been gathering a lot of data, and people want dashboards and graphs to see how my data is performing, how my cases are performing, how my sales are performing, how my, you know, my employees are creating tasks and finishing tasks. So organizing the data, big thing, then creating dashboards, graphs, all kinds of suites. Now, obviously, it's about, okay, when someone comes to me and says, I want to build a new graph for the dashboard, is it like, okay, you've got the data, you have new tools, why don't we just ask the data to give you as a straight up answer of what you need?
It's the other way around, though.
It's the other way around, but you need to leapfrog that thinking a little bit. So it's maybe not the best, you know, example. It is, however, one that I've actively seen where I'm like, wait a second, we need to jump forward two steps because there is no need for the middle interim solution anymore. And I think that's a challenge because it needs a change in thinking of how you think about solving the same old problems with new opportunities.
We're going to explore it a bit more in the episode for the rest. Also last week, we see Google announcing its A2A protocol, agent-to-agent protocol. Yet another protocol, at least that's how I initially read it.
Yeah.
How does it relate to MCP?
So I think it's indeed, there's a lot of these protocols kind of being developed at the moment. The big thing that for me with the MCP one was the natural embrace of the community over the last couple of months. They launched a while back, and it was one of the things that they didn't necessarily launch it with. Look at all of the big players that, you know, we're launching this with, and it still got embraced by this community. So it's a very, I feel like, a bottom-up approach. I think Google is obviously one of the big tech companies. They have launched with about 50 logos on who's buying into this. So it's a different strategy on how they want to maybe get to the dominance there. I think, however, that they're going to be complementary in a way. The community is trying to test as many things out there. And I think this speed is great because we will see what survives, what complements each other, and what kind of competes. But as in every economy, competition is also always good. We will see the adoption on both sides, and for every enterprise, for every type of organization, there is a different flavor. I do think that having the big players like Google embracing it, knowing that they provide also applications for larger enterprise, large scale, is good, because that thinking is what, for example, our customers are going to need as well, is to say, you know, is this technology suitable for my enterprise grade, high security, high consistency, high availability type of environment? So I think it's great that they're also, everyone's coming into the mix here. Only time will tell if there is one dominant or if they kind of work together on that.
Hey, then moving into the topic for today, which is all about process orchestration and process automation. Mm-hmm. I think if we take one step back, then since forever, banks have many different processes. Mm-hmm. They're typically rather complex. Mm-hmm. They involve multiple stakeholders, internal and external, between the employee and the actual customer, client or member. And at the same time, you also see still paper trails, you see Excel sheets, you see a lot of different variables that play into any given process in any type of institution, from small to large, from retail all the way to corporate institutional. So maybe if we zoom out first of all and explain the types of problems that we are solving, mm-hmm. maybe you can give a quick intro there, and then we're going to dive into what are the differences between these definitions that I just shared.
So I think what we tend to solve for is the largest possible scope of some of these processes. So we try to look at the banks, as you know, by looking at what the customer sees, what the customer needs. A bank, inevitably, or any organization, will always have an inside-out look. Yes, there are neat tricks that you can do by leaving a seat empty or give someone a hat that says, I'm the customer in this meeting, and it's great. However, you will inevitably be inside looking at. We're always trying to take that position of outside looking in, as you know. What it therefore then means is that we look at the processes without any bias to how the bank is organized or where these activities inside of the process happen or need to happen. We're just looking at it, how can we make it as smooth as possible for the people involved? That's the level of complexity immediately there, because when you map that to the realities of an organization, you're starting to see that you're touching all kinds of different departments, not one process, but multiple processes, not one system, but multiple system, and not one person. Maybe if you're a credit union where there's one person doing most of the, onboarding or underwriting in that sense, but dozens of people, hundreds of people at times that are part of that process, you're entering that level of scale and complexity immediately. That's kind of also where we are therefore needing to look, because to be able to orchestrate it around the customer, we need to maybe at first glance ignore a little bit about how this has historically been done, where the papers are being shuffled, where the swivel chair action is happening, what the legacy systems are, to design the best possible outcome. And of course, then it meets in the middle. But when we zoom out, that's kind of where we look at the overarching end-to-end process. Now, and then as my title or my job, we focus as Backbase mostly on the digital sales umbrella of that. So it's all about onboarding new customers or members. It's all about originating new products, whether those are loans or just simple accounts, but also taking existing customers and how do you make it easier for them to originate more products and more money-making top-line growth for your bank. So it's a big domain, but the reason that we've chosen to underpin that with process orchestration tells you a little bit about the fact that it's hard to do as a point solution.
I think that's it's one of those let's say business quotes out there that says you get what you organize for.
Yes.
Like the way you're organized internally will show up in your product, will show up in your processes.
Absolutely.
Which is a very hard paradigm to break through.
Yeah.
So I think also for the audience listening in, I'm quite confident that you recognize this challenge. Mm-hmm. So let's in the coming, let's say 20 minutes, unpack a little bit how we are tackling this and what are the patterns that anyone can take home to their own organizations. And maybe for starters, Robert, I hear orchestration, I hear automation. What are the difference between those two? How do they come together?
I don't know if there's a right or wrong. This is how we see it. The way that we see it is automation we use for more vertical, smaller tasks or smaller parts of a process. When you speak to a lot of our customers or a lot of our banks, and I've been kind of doing automation in a way for the last 10, 15 years, they take one topic. They take one domain and they say, we're going to automate that because we're wasting X amount of time on that. And that's a great start because you get that kind of fractional improvement of efficiencies for people. That's where automation is very good, right? Automating manual tasks, making sure that repetitive tasks are not weighing down on employee efficiency, et cetera. So for that, it's been very good. And those tools, in all honesty, have been there forever. So automation in our world is in a smaller scope, which I like to see as a little vertical. So it does a group of tasks or one task really well to get to a certain outcome. And great efficiencies to be had. I think banks are doing fantastic in areas of that. Zooming out to what we discussed earlier, for me, orchestration is, again, first of all, looking at the end-to-end and realizing that you have numerous tasks that you need to automate. Not only tasks, also how these tasks are being done. If they are automated, you need to tell them when you need to trigger the automation. That means you need to interact with multiple systems because we all know there's lots of legacy systems out there in these banks. The other is we all often think about there's one customer, there's one persona, and there's one bank employee if you look at it from the outside. Not very true, right? If you have a customer, not a prospect, maybe it's you. Maybe it's your partner that wants to join that account. Maybe it's you opening as a business and your three directors also need to kind of come in. So you have already multiple personas that you need to cater for. On the employee side, same thing. Maybe there's the relationship manager that tried to sell you or facilitate you the origination. Then you've got the underwriters. Then you've got the anti-money laundering specialist and the list goes on. So again, lots of different people doing lots of different tasks in different processes. Every part of the way have a different process. So bringing that together for us, orchestration, like a conductor in an orchestra, is about looking at the end-to-end. What's the goal that you want to achieve? How are we going to achieve that? And being that master of puppets across people, systems, and data. And that's how we focus on this domain. And that's how we try to break down some of the problems that we face and find answers towards those problems.
Yeah. Building on top of that, this problem space, or basically this dynamic to orchestrate all the different processes and to automate the majority of them, that's not very new, is it? That's been around for forever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's also already different solutions out there to tackle this problem, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah? Absolutely.
What have you seen so far that is typically put into the mix to make progress, to make processes more efficient or?
Sure. So I think, you know, we've always been big proponents as well of BPM, business process management, right? And I think that's a great tool to kind of start your kind of journey on, right? We see the world as processes and we see a big process with sub-processes solving our complex problems. Automation has also been there forever. The RPA, robotic process, robotic automation has been, I don't know, IBM Blue has been doing that for forever. I've encountered that in banks already, like in the early 2000s. The problem is, again, that tackles often these small bits, right? So again, good for automation tasks, great. The process automation bit is good, but it's relatively rigid, right? You need to know upfront what the process looks like. So there have definitely been tools, and banks are putting them to use, to good use, and we've been putting them to very good use for a long time. I think the introduction of IPaaS solutions as well, to kind of understand that, hey, wait a second, we have all of these legacy systems we need to connect to, we need to plug into, we need to get the data or mostly the data from everywhere. How can we provide a unified layer in that? It's also part of this mix. It's another tool in the arsenal for automation and orchestration.
Where the IPaaS is integration platform as a service, right? Correct. An industrialized integration layer.
Correct. So you have multiple examples out there in the field. Obviously, we have we do that heavily as well, because we understand that ecosystem that we play in, and that it's an integral tool. So yes, there have been legacy. I don't want to call them legacy. There have been the traditional ways of doing that. I think that was ripe for change anyway. We have always been trying to lead that in taking elements of this, whether that's been automation and process management and all of that stuff, and building products around that. I think that is now going to accelerate as well, is the fact that, you know, we're going to get a different type of automation. We, you know, in the end, an agent that does maybe one thing, you could be seen from the outside as just simple one-step automation. But how they're doing that is radically different than what we used to do, is to say, well, if this, then that. Yep. So that's where we're going to see a lot of this change. And I think putting actually the learnings together of all of these types of systems and kind of interweaving them with the newer technologies is where the future will be. Because like I said before, I don't think that the problems are going to get radically different. The problems that we try to solve are still the same. We now just have new tools to solve them in a different way. And I think everyone's trying to adapt that. I think the what you see as well, the low-code, no-code type of platforms are getting a lot of traction. They are also very interesting. They also use BPM and a lot of these automation tools inside of them as well. They obviously have their pitfalls as well. They're less flexible. You need to play into their confines. They also bring the friction between IT and the business into play.
In the UI, right?
Well, it looks fantastic. And every business person is like, wow, I can do this now. I can just design a process from scratch, deploy it, and walk away. We all know that even that level of design and change management within a financial institution, it's not that easy. So it's great. And we are embracing it, because there are absolutely parts that we can accelerate with no to low code, especially when it comes to changing business rules, making different types of decisions quickly, implementing change, being agile about how you manage your software and your system. This is great. When it goes too much towards, right, let's have this kind of drag and drop, point and click type of solution solve everything, it's, you know, they run into the same problems that any more traditional build system has as well.
Continuing on what you shared already, there's this change, this new tool or this new set of capabilities that are clearly AI powered. Mm-hmm. Moving onwards, how does AI literally unlock this whole space? Like, what's the new wave that you're also stepping into with your teams?
Mm-hmm. So I think we need to look at it in two levels, as I'm always having to look at the two levels, the level of the problem domain and the platform domain, so to speak. So let's start maybe with the platform domain. The fact that we are introducing these types of tools into our process orchestration intelligence layer, basically, means that we can get better process designs. We can get better at understanding how processes are acting when they're out there in the field. We can get processes that learn. So there is a lot of these kind of elements that allow us to incorporate into the platform layers that will start to change the platform itself, or the performance of the processes. also, we can start to embed more business logic inside of the platform, that where indeed before we had to either create decision tables or kind of more preset logic.
It's a bit more static, actually.
Very static, actually. Is that you can say, right, we have parameters and guardrails, and within that, we're going to have AI play a part, whether that's an agent or anything else, is to say, right, you can now infer certain decisions in that sense, right? So you're already kind of moving into the business logic of it, but powering it by the platform. I still think that for the foreseeable future, even when you get down to the technical orchestration of agents, and you know, this is also where some of these protocols come in, is that they focus on the orchestration of the agents themselves. That's a very different level than the business orchestration that we talk about. Obviously, you need them both, but it's a different level of orchestration. I do believe that in the foreseeable future, as humans living today and in the next 5 years, and especially our customers or people in the banks, they'll want to put their, this is a business process that I can understand, lens on top of how AI can be used. So actually the orchestration, again, of the business logic that the AI will execute is still going to be important. So think of it as maybe in the next year, we still want to say, I'll design the process and I'll tell you, AI, when you can help me in that process or when you can execute something that I want your help on. Whereas maybe in future, the AI is going to consume more and more of the process itself, and it's going to find its way through the elements of what would have made up your process today, but it'll just know how to find its way through. That's the end state, I would say.
So in a way, you're saying initially we put it in the first gear, like a bit of a limited context. There's guardrails, super clear explainability, like what is this particular agent in this example? What is the agent able to execute upon? And most likely there's another agent double checking the work of the first agent that I just mentioned, plus most likely have a human in the loop moment. So that they don't execute completely autonomous without any oversight. I think there's guardrails, there's explainability. We'll tackle compliance and regulation in a little while as well. But most of you're saying very powerful technology, but the skill we apply it to initially needs to be digestible for the actual human in this scenario.
And I'll give you an example of, you know, the, I would say, the traditional nature of the industry that we cater for. Again, some of these automation technologies have been there for donkey's years. We have implemented processes for our customers. Our toolset today can make all decisions that it needs to. We collect all of the data, we do a lot of the orchestration. At the end of that case, we have full power to have that be a rule-based decision. The amount of customers that we have over the last 5 years that then still say, throw me a manual task for approval or for final review. It's absolutely fine. And I think that's your risk appetite, and whether you're underwriting a loan is very different from when you're onboarding someone. But still, it is a sign of, we still want to
keep a check in place.
Absolutely. So I think if we extrapolate that, yes, the technology is now very rapidly evolving in terms of its decision-making powers. Mm-hmm. How willing are we, and then specifically our customers, to kind of embrace that and remove some of the human in the loop moments? And so I think that there is still a runway for business process orchestration tools to A, embrace the AI assisting capabilities and the improvements and all of that stuff, but then to say, right, we are still kind of designing and defining the way that this is going to be used.
It reminds me, Robert, of one of the earlier episodes I did with Chris Cheyenne, mm-hmm. our head of AI. Mm-hmm. He basically made a statement. He said, hey, AI is nothing new in banking. Like, we're actually exaggerating a little bit mm-hmm. here. Because traditional AI has been around for multiple decades already. Mm-hmm. It's completely baked into the operating model. Mm-hmm. Think about how you do KYC, AML, IDV, how you do those types of capabilities. Mm-hmm. It's all flag-based. How you do fraudulent checks on transactions, it's all flag-based. It is actually, to a degree, more traditional AI being applied at scale. So it's not that new. So if you go one level deeper, typically we're not talking in the domain of Gen AI, mm-hmm. right? Basically the AI that can, on its own, mm-hmm. deliver certain outcomes. That is, to a degree, a black box. Mm-hmm. Hence, you need guardrails and so forth. So I think there also to take one step back and basically say, hey, if you look at the complete chessboard, a part of the chessboard already is pretty standard, pretty default, pretty comfortable mm-hmm. For most of our customers yeah. as well, and yeah. hopefully also the rest of the audience. The thing that is a bit more uncomfortable right now is, to a degree, the black box that you see in mostly Gen AI. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you get it amplified if you have multiple agents levering that type of, let's say, capability to drive business critical processes. So I think there what we're discussing so far is there's a way to actually put a little bit of a brake on it. Yeah. Just make sure that they don't go out of the confounds or out of the guardrails, yeah. while at the same time getting comfortable with the technology, which I think is paramount. And I can even share that it is even paramount within Backbase mm-hmm. To have a risk on attitude, to lean in, embrace it and see how it actually works in the day-to-day yeah. Versus talking about it for many, many months while the others are already moving, right? And we see that very much amplified also in our customer base where there's a bit of an initial hesitation, which is completely understandable, but moving into it, it will, at least in my view, it will open your eyes.
I think that's our job, right, as well. I think is if you look at the regulated industry, because a lot of the regulations will come to play, a regulated industry like the one that we service, you've created an industry that is hesitant to take half a step forward. I think, therefore, it's our job to say, we'll consciously take two steps forward, fully knowing that we're going to have to take a step back again. And that's how I see some of this. So yes, we will show the multi-agent orchestration, automation in decision making, the generation of decision assisting context, fully knowing that that's not something I'll deploy tomorrow in a financial institution per se.
Moving to the final piece, we talked about one blocker right now, which is there's a regulatory framework which is not fully baked across the different regions and territories where we operate, which mostly leads to the C-suite or at least the leadership taking a bit of a pause, saying, hey, until that really lands and is super clear, we're not going to bring it to production because we don't know what the regulatory framework looks like. Mm-hmm. So that is still in flight in many of the conversations that we have. Mm-hmm. But there's also other blockers or maybe patterns that hold mm-hmm. the industry back. Mm-hmm. Can you give a few examples there on what you've observed?
Are you talking about process orchestration as a whole with AI or just AI?
I would say as a whole. Yeah. Like as a whole in this domain, like again, it has been around for decades that this is a topic that if you solve it well, your cost to serve will yes. dramatically go down, your productivity will dramatically go up, and most likely you can bring better value propositions and grow your share of wallet. So I think on all angles, it has a massive impact. Yeah. With AI, we now have a massive booster, major opportunity, yeah. but still there's hurdles.
Definitely hurdles. I think you mentioned actually one of the big ones. We in the product and engineering, we know it as Conway's Law. It's what you said earlier about you will create systems, whatever that system is, a software system or a system, based on the lines of communication of your organization. So basically, if you're organized in a certain way, then that's what the system is going to do. Guess what happens when you're designing a process? The process as a system is going to get designed by your view of the world. You know how our favorite, famous, infamous slide of the spaghetti monster of systems and legacy tech that we always use, right? Beautiful slide. You'd wish it was that easy, because actually what that picture is missing is about 15 silos cutting across some of that. And some of those lines can't even cross those silo walls. So the fact that you are trying to solve for things that are overarching, the scope of that makes this an organizational problem. Implementation is difficult. Stakeholder buy-in is difficult. You see this as well with larger kind of banks that are financial institutions that would have purchased every automation and orchestration toolbox that is out there. They have it all. But in one corner of the organization, they use this for that, and then in the other one, they use this for that, because it's logical. That's how they can make sense of the world, because it's extremely hard, as you know, from a large organization's perspective, is to make some of that change happen. So that's absolutely a blocker, is to say how to effectively implement some of these tools that are actually going to be looking across silos, across organizations, across departments, to be able to create that seamless servicing banking experience for the top line. So I think that's an organizational problem, very much real. I think that's something that they will need to reinvent themselves as well. Mm-hmm. Whether that's the fact that they are organized like with channels and all of that stuff is big. The other massive elephant in the room is still legacy systems themselves. How do I connect to this? How do I get the data out of this? How do I apply data governance? Because if you're going to let loose your agents on your data, and it's going to make decisions based on it, you need to be sure that the data is the right. Yes. So that's another big shift. And in all honesty, coming from an area where customer data has been super, super hard to get organized, because, you know, I come from the compliance and the KYC AML space. Any large financial institution has been struggling for years to get that single customer view. Everyone's struggling. And I'm not talking about the single customer view that we sometimes talk about here, as in a single pane of glass in a tool that someone can look at. Simply, where is the data about you as a customer, that and all of your relations, and how up to date is it, and how can I use that to continuously monitor your risk or to sell you more products? So in all of these aspects of your business problems trying to solve, whether it's remaining compliant or selling you more, I need to know who you are. For concepts like our tailored value propositions and family banking, I need to know that you're a family man. So again, it's a super important element that they will need to address in that sense. Regulatory, I think you mentioned it as well. I think it'll be a lot of let's wait and see of what's allowed and what's not. Simply put, today, in a lot of these processes, because they touch upon a regulated industry, you need to be very explicit about what have you done, how have you decided this, and what are the rules that you used to come to this decision. Whether that's why I'm rejecting you, why I'm putting you on a high risk list, why I'm giving you that loan, why I'm not giving you that loan. Mm-hmm. You can also imagine that if you leave it to go wild with the technology that's out there today, you'll get to the same outcomes, but there's very little explainability to have about how and why you walked away with that $5 million loan. So again, it'll come, it'll develop. We already see that explainability, but finding an orchestrational path through that and then finding something that regulators are going to approve of and embrace is something that I think a lot of financial institutions will also have a little bit of a wait and see attitude for.
This makes it a little bit daunting, what we discussed right now. At the same time, you can already get started today, right? 100%. Do you have a few pointers for the audience on what you can already pick up on right now when it comes to the mindset approach, but also technology-wise, perhaps?
I think as we have it in product as well, is always think big, start small. Mm-hmm. So yes, set yourself a North Star about how your ideal situation would look, but indeed start small. The one thing I would say is start small, not by just doing one blind automation or just getting one agent from somewhere and saying, yeah, we've, 90% improved this one little piss.
Check.
Try and set your first step that's going to get you to that end goal that you set. So pick a domain, pick a problem that you have, and start to unravel it and start small. Start, whether it's to say, right, for us, it's super cumbersome to get new customers in. We have all of the digital channels, so imagine you have all of that, but still we're just making too many manual approvals, or the risk is maybe too intolerant, so we get a lot of 4i principal reviews or something like that. Change some of these procedural things, use the technologies to help you get to better insights, better summarized context, so that even if you want to stay manual, you have faster tools to do it. So I think it's very important that you can start small and you can start anywhere. I think it's not about, okay, clear the table, we need to transform the bank in one go, and it's all going
See
to be about,
years.
Yeah, it's never going to work, right? You're never going to replace all of the legacy systems. You're never going to find that one tool that's going to do it all. You're never going to find the 50 agents that are going to be beautiful for you. So you need to start somewhere. And I think it's like with anything, any daunting task, you just need to start somewhere. And I think what I like about our message as well is that kind of that progressive transformation is that you don't have to do it all at the same time. It's like pick one domain, pick one of your biggest problems and start to apply some of these new technologies, these new principles, these new way of thinking of, okay, how can we, might we be able to tackle this now? What can we learn from that? How can we apply that to the next step and the next step? And then, transformation gets underway.
So progressive modernization.
Absolutely. Incremental.
Yeah. It basically means that you bring the right infra in place already. And based on top of that, you're going to go use case by use case almost. So essentially breaking it down to lower the complexity, lower the mental blockers that you might find in the organization typically. Thanks for sharing. I think it's a very helpful insight. Moving to the summary, Robert. I'm trying to do my best here just to give a bit of a view on what we discussed. So I think overall, we really unpacked process orchestration. And in process orchestration, you alluded to, hey, whatever you touch within a bank, you can start with the outside-in perspective. Let's do a great and seamless experience for the customer, the member, as well as the employee. It's almost the easy starting point because you're not limited by any internal dealings or internal systems or what have you. So if you start there and you work your way down, there is a moment where you're going to touch the actual organization, which is pretty complex. Mm-hmm. Multiple departments, multiple stakeholders, multiple procedures, internal, external. You'll also find that one process will trigger the other process, which yet again has a whole range of other dependencies. So I think there what you shared about process orchestration as a container term in which we work and also your role works in the context of Backbase and with our customers is to make sure that we have a vision on how you drive multi-department, multi-system, multi-stakeholder, multi-process processes and really allow it to be transformed completely from the bottom up almost. We then also alluded to how does this come together with AI? Right, we spoke a little bit about agentic AI, and of course, there's a whole wave of change and pretty solid progress in terms of how these agents can collaborate. We talked about MCP, we talked about Google A2A now coming to life. At the end of the day, I think our vision that we share here at the table is that these agents will take over certain parts of these processes, will take over orchestration parts, and going forward, most likely the whole range of those processes to do super smart automation based on intelligence, not based on static rules or static fixed sets of data points. So I think that realm that we explored is super exciting. And then lastly, we talked a little bit about what's typically keeping the organization from moving, be it ourselves, be it our customers, be it our prospects or the audience at large. In a way, you said you need a top-down mandate. You need a top-down strategy to be laid down so that the organization itself is not going to literally fight itself almost, like the Conway Law example that you shared. So top-down, that change needs to start. That mental buy-in needs to be there. That championing needs to be there. The second part we unpacked was data and governance. Without the right and clean data, you're not going to be able to move properly. So I think there's a whole piece on how do you bring together all of your integrations? How do you bring together and basically centralize all of the data that you have within your remit? So that you can actually get that single customer view, which is a data view, mm-hmm. all data about Robert, all data about Tim, so that you can leverage that data with AI or even without to drive proper journeys and experiences and flows and processes that can really make the difference in many ways. And then lastly, we talked a little bit about, let's say, the guardrails, explainability, human in the loop, mm-hmm. all the safety that needs to be in place, just to make sure that we feel comfortable and confident to implement. And to also have the regulator at a happy level in terms of, hey, we understand how this is being applied in your context, which also triggered me. Like, I would love to have a regulator individual here at the table in the podcast to explain their view. But that's maybe for another moment. Anything you would add, Robert, to today's episode?
I think we are now working and living in very, very interesting times in this particular space, not just process orchestration, but in the technology space and how it's taking over some of the things that we take for granted and how they're being done. The interesting thing is, like I said before, I don't think that our problems are changing. The nature of the problems that we need to solve as humans or as systems are changing. So it's also not that kind of, it's not, it's a paradigm shift, but it's all in the how. I think then, sure, as a knock-on effect, then we'll create new problems that need solving, or we create new situations that will ask for different approaches. But it's very exciting. And I think it's daunting putting my, you know, software builder for banks hat on. I think it's very daunting for a financial institution to understand this, to wrap their heads around how fast this is moving, what it means for their organization, what it means for the way that they work, for what it means for their ecosystem, their system landscape. I think that's a very big challenge that we're facing. And I think it's not a problem if you're maybe not doing anything now. I don't think it's not a problem if you're afraid that you don't understand it yet. I think it's a problem if you ignore it. So in the sense that you know that you need to move that way, I think that's a given. That's an inevitable. And that you then start small, because with every big task, it's often the first step is the scariest one. Rather than complaining about all of the data you don't have, what do you do have? Start there.
Yep.
If you know that Tim and Robert are customers, great. Reach out to them, right? So it's, again, look at the positive side. Yes, it's daunting. It's very doable. And we're all on this journey together. So I think it's our customers, our industry, our type of industry in terms of the builders. It's all kind of trying to move it forward into the same direction, and we're all going to benefit from it. So it's super exciting, although it can be a bit scary at times.
Yeah, I think in this case, we're all reinventing ourselves, be it your company, be it yourself as an individual leader or contributor, which indeed, it is super exciting. It's also a little bit scary, but yeah, you have to look it into the eye and just go for it, which definitely is what you're sharing here. I think also just to wrap up, one of the objectives of this podcast is to basically increase the understanding of the industry and the audience in terms of how AI actually comes to life in the context of banking. There's this one stat from Accenture from end of last year where 53% of the executive population in banking doesn't feel fully comfortable to embrace the new paradigm with AI because of knowledge, because of misunderstanding, because of timing. Mm-hmm. That number might be a little bit higher by now because, of course, people are self-educating and people are very curious to get that education under the belt. But it's definitely one of the objectives that we have to just share and compare transparently our notes. And again, also, we're not perfect. We're also learning here. So any feedback, more than welcome. But stay tuned for many more of these conversations. Robert, thanks for joining. Thanks for sharing insights.
Thank you for having me.
And see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.